Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 15 on Tuesday, the 15th of December, 2015. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
All the 15s this week.
I know. We were 13s the other week.
Were we?
Yeah.
I suppose so. 13 and 13.
Yeah.
It'll be a while before we get the episode number to tie with the date again, though. To tie with the year again, though.
I do feel, yes.
Yes.
How are you anyway, Alan?
I'm surviving. Clinging to the edge.
You seem to be flying again.
Yeah.
You did mutter something about that on Twitter.
Apologies to those of you who saw my grumbling on Twitter yesterday, or the other day, Monday. Last pair of flights. So I'm actually coming to you from sunny. It's kind of dark and sleety Sweden tonight. So, yeah. Funnily enough, I'm sure it'll be clearer than whenever I'm doing it from home in the Midlands, but never mind. How's about you, anyway?
Yeah, not too bad. Again, still just before Christmas, so still busy with work. Dear. But it's been fairly quiet on the news front, hasn't it?
It has. It's been refreshingly quiet. So don't worry, this is only a one commuter tonight, I think, rather than a two commuter like last week's was.
Yes.
It's been relatively quiet. A couple of surprise ones popping up at the last minute there, which is nice.
Would you like to do the follow-up?
Yeah, no problem at all. So the first thing we've got tonight, a quick follow-up from a story we covered what seems like many weeks ago now, and I'm sure it's only three or four really, is about the Vauxhall Zafira. So remember we talked a bit before about Rory Harvey's little video, explaining what they were doing about the issue with the Vauxhall Zafira's catching fire. And as a follow-up to that, it's just worth mentioning that the DVSA, so the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency, has acknowledged what the actual root cause of those fires was in the Zafira B. And for the record, it was incorrect repairs. Okay, so it was people incorrectly repairing the fan rheostat on the heater in certain Zafiras. They're still issuing the recall. They're still going through it. They're still checked and repaired over 45,000 vehicles. But it's worth mentioning that that's 45,000 out of 234,938 Zafira B owners who got sent letters. So there's still quite a lot of work to do, but they're well on the way through it. They know what the potential issue is, and it has been officially acknowledged that the fault isn't necessarily Vauxhall's. It is a fault with repair, so it's not as stuff came from the factory. And of course, all that work's being done free of charge. Vauxhall are very quick to point out in their press release. Mm. So yeah, that was that. Really, that was the only follow-up.
Yep. On to the news.
Relatively painless.
Yeah. And we start the news with it must be nearly Christmas because petrol in certain places is below.
We've made a mistake. We've put two good news stories in a row. We should have put a bad news in between.
If you notice our news, it's nearly all good news.
It's nearly all good news, actually, now that I run back down through it. Yes, it is, isn't it? Oh, gee.
So this must be our Christmas episode. We're full of the Christmas cheer.
Yeah.
Bar humbug. But yeah, anyway, so back to it. The petrol is below a pound in certain places, it should be looking at the price of oil. Hopefully that continues. Hopefully it stays at that level for a long time, because then that'll encourage people to fill up more, and it'll help prove the fair fuel brigade, prove that their claims are actually true, which will give them more power to the elbow when they go to the MPs to get them to help reduce fuel duty rather than just freeze it, but reduce fuel duty. But as I've said many times, I can't really see that happening because motorists are seen as such an income generator for UK PLC that I doubt they will.
I agree. As son of a haulier, I agree. but yeah, it's good. You can tell that all three of my two and a half of my my petrol vehicles have pretty much full tanks right at the minute, given how low fuel has gone. I must remember to fill them up before I go away for Christmas.
We fibbed. Not all are good news.
Oh, it's not quite all good. Oh, no. It's not quite all good news. And amazingly, for those of you who are on tenterhooks about Volkswagen, it's not. Fiat Chrysler in the USA have been fined $70 million for the second time this year. I mean, we spent a lot of time not wanting to hit Fiat Chrysler over the head with a spade yet again. We've been doing a lot of talking about Volkswagen this year and how much they've been being fined or they're likely to be fined in a big chunk for the Dieselgate stuff. It's worth mentioning that some of the historic stuff, and it is historic because it's often before the Fiat takeover, FCA, they've been fairly racking up some fines piecemeal, bit by bit this year. But it just doesn't seem to get nearly as much press. What was it for this time?
Failing to provide sufficient safety data over the past 12 years. It was down to improper coding to log the issues.
Bad database.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just haven't been saying what all their issues have been and telling them quick enough or properly. So. Mm-hmm. Yes. Not good news for FCA, so they'll have to find another place for Ferrari to be floated on the stock exchange.
And the thing is, they've got to pay it within 30 days.
Yeah.
In full.
That's interesting, because it on the article that will be in the show notes, it goes on to mention Takata, who are the company that are behind the massive issue with airbags in America, have been given a 5-year payment plan. Now, I think the NHTSA, which is the American safety organization that does all this, I think they're going to be lucky to get that money, because I can see Takata going under, because all the car companies are just bailing on them left, right, and center. So they're going to have they're going to have no customers, so they're not going to be able to pay this.
Yeah, it's a pretty harsh one, this, because it's $70 million within 30 days
Christmas. In full.
In full. And within 8 months, FCA have to turn in all the missing data. So it must have been, whilst there aren't loads of details around it, it must have been quite bad.
This must be quite a serious issue for them to. It doesn't look like there's any. Well, it is possibly because it's the second time as well.
I think so, yeah.
That's not going to help the case. So, well, I hope they can get it fixed quickly and they can get back on the back to making some money and cars, because as we said last week, we only want these companies to do well so we can see interesting cars. But talking of interesting things and good news for, well, some positive news, finally, from the Volkswagen Group, Alan.
Well, it depends who you are, how positive you think it is, actually. This is a bit of both good news and bad news. Porsche, depending on how good your German pronunciation is.
I'll go with Porsche.
We'll go from Porsche. the Boxster and Cayman get a new moniker. Now, what I haven't worked out, and it could be because I haven't read stuff properly. Oh, there we go. That both the Boxer and Cayman, that sort of pairing of cars, are going to be referred to next year as the 718, which is, you know, it's kind of strange that the Porsche are starting to reintroduce the numbering, to be honest. But they'll be called the 718 Boxster and the 718. Oh, ding.
Ding. Drink.
We're doing so well.
Go on, are we 8 minutes in? Boxster.
Remember, it's an hour later for me this week. 718 Boxster and the 718 Cayman.
How long before they drop the Boxster and Cayman, though? It won't be long, will it?
Dalekathlon. I gave it 2 generations max.
Yeah.
2 more max.
But what I quite like about this little story, I know you're going to talk about something that drives the purists a bit insane, but I like the fact that the Cayman is going to be cheaper than the Boxster.
I know.
Because I really prefer the Cayman. I know I went on quite gushingly when we talked about the GT4, but I think it looks so nice.
I have always preferred the Cayman.
I'm not a soft top chap generally. I may have mentioned that once or twice.
And I may have mentioned that I am. But that said, for me, the Boxster has always seemed a little bit effeminate. I don't know why. I mean, this is from a man who drives an MX-5. The Boxster has always...
I'm glad you said that.
I had to get it in before any of the rest of you did.
Oh, dear. Yes, okay.
And it's got a decent-sized boot for all those pairs of scissors.
Oh, wow. You're doing it again. I mean, I
don't. What do you mean? At least this time, I'm making fun of myself.
Don't get me wrong. I'd be happy to have a go in a Boxster as well. But I just, if it was my cash, if I had that cash to spend on a car, then I would prefer to go the Cayman route rather than the Boxster route.
Do you know why my thing has always been with the Cayman? It's the way that rear haunch has always, even in the first generation ones, you can't see me moving my hands to sort of show the shape.
No, but I totally agree with you.
That rear haunch, the way it went over and it dipped down and then it went back up into that into the boot and the boot lid, and the way that sloped down towards the rear. Loved it right from the first time I saw the Cayman.
Yep.
It was just like, the front's okay, the side's all right, but that rear three-quarter view with that haunch, God, that's good enough reason to buy that car over the Boxster for me. And that's not dissing the Boxster at all, anyway.
So do explain why purists might be a little bit unhappy, or are a little bit unhappy.
Well, they're not unhappy. They're just being grumpy enough girl draggers. It's basically, not only is the new engine going to be turbocharged, but it's going to be a flat four. So 4-cylinder Boxster Cayman and turbocharged. Oh my goodness me, the world is going to end, if you saw some people on Twitter just after this announcement. Oh, it got a little bit lame, to be perfectly honest. I understand exactly why Porsche's doing it. You know, you need the... They need the emissions to be better. They need the fuel economy to be better. And the 4-cylinder, it's easier to do that with than the 6-cylinder. And of course, turbocharging will mean that I will be hugely surprised if there is any noticeable loss in power. But of course, it also starts to give them the ability to widen that gap between the 718 and the 991.5 or 911.1
911. I would imagine they are keen to do that, especially after the so many people were talking about how was it the GT4 or whatever the Cayman, whatever, I don't know,
GTS
was picked by some above 911s. Mm-hmm. As the car to go for. I would imagine they want to reintroduce the gap.
People are quite upset about it because they were expecting a new, even smaller Porsche underneath the Cayman Boxster, and it looks like that's not going to be the case. And, you know, I'm sure that it will be engineered in such a way, shape, or form where, hey, would you look at that? We've done some work, and amazingly, the 6-cylinder fits. You know, God, aren't we clever? So I'm sure that there will be enough space in there. Porsche is keen to draw the links between 718 models and the 919 race car, which also has a 2-litre V4 turbo as part of its drivetrain. No, that's as part of its drivetrain, not its entire drivetrain, because, of course, it's one of these performance hybrid jobs.
Did we mention Chris Harris's vid
Which one of Chris Harris's vids?
The one where he did the hypercars all got together, the hybrid hypercars on the track.
I don't know that we did that.
I will put a link in the show notes. If didn't mention it, go watch it.
Absolutely go watch that video.
That's it's brilliant.
It's that test that Mark II Top Gear, I don't want to call it new Top Gear or old Top Gear, Mark II Top Gear was never able to do whilst it was still Mark II Top Gear. So the one that you're talking about is the McLaren P1, Ferrari LaFerrari, yeah. And the Porsche. I can never remember it's the correct definition. I want to say 918.
I think it is 918, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's terrible. I'm so
sorry. What I got from that video was how the three drivers there just had a total laugh. You got to see three guys who get to drive phenomenal machinery all the time, just loving every second of what they were doing.
Mm.
That's what really came across to me, because sometimes these car reviews, I'm not saying particularly from Chris Harris, but across the internet,
particularly
across TV,
not from Chris Harris, actually,
from TV and all the rest of it, that people can come across a bit, well, yes, I found this a bit dull, you know, and here I am again, yet another fabulous car, and yawn, yawn, yawn. And they weren't that at all.
I find that there is a smidgen of understeer and extremis, which I'm sure that most people won't notice, and it just gets old.
Yeah, but they weren't that at all. They knew they were very lucky to be in these machines, and they were just enjoying that time that they were in them, and as much fun as they could have in them, which just seemed to be driving them, which gave them as much fun as they needed, and yeah. that was really refreshing, I thought. Apart from the camera work was stunning, and the cars seemed to be amazing.
And the editing was beautiful, but all of that would have been just fine, and we'd gone, nice video, nice cars. But no, the amount of passion being shown, and just the amount of excitement, and just how much sheer pure fun that Tiffany Dale, Chris Harris, and the other chap whose name I've now forgotten. Is it one of the Franchitti brothers?
Yes.
Yes. Not Dario.
Yes.
The other one, I can't remember.
Is it Marino?
I think so, yeah. It's genius. Watch it, basically. Let's stop talking about it and just let people go watch it, because it's well worth it. Well worth it. Anything I missed in there? No. Oh, here we go. It does sit at the bottom of this Top Gear advert. Article. Six-cylinder engines could still be retained from range topping specials like the Porsche, like the Boxster Spider and Cayman GT4. So there we go. That's just what I was saying before. I'm sorry, they put a nice link in the middle for related content, which made it less obvious that there's more stuff down below. But yeah, so yeah, sure. Maybe the standard models will be V4 turbos, but I'm sure there'll be higher spec engines.
Mm. But moving on to about the only motorsport we have any remote knowledge, when I say we, I mean you, any remote knowledge of.
Gee, shucks. Formula E.
Yep.
So, some of you may remember, if you wind back to the special that I did with Graham Davison at Qualcomm, we were talking about some of the Formula One teams, Formula E teams. We were talking about some of the Formula E teams there, and he was mentioning about Trulli, and saying, well, the thing is, they've not really run any test laps and stuff. They've had a couple of issues so far already about actually, getting to tracks, and about their bits of their vehicles getting to tracks, certainly at the first one in Beijing. And they didn't run. And what we find now, all of a sudden, is that the Jaguar are going to be entering the championship. So, yeah, Jaguar are going to be in Formula E, much the same way as Renault in Formula E, and essentially Volkswagen and Audi are in Formula E.
But it's great for Formula E.
It's fantastic for Formula E, and this is what they're really, really hoping for. It is brilliant for Formula E, and it gives. And what's great for the manufacturers, I think, is that it gives a relatively safe zone in which manufacturers can try out this new technology, and they have certain limits imposed upon them, which is just fine. If you want to know what those limits are, please, guys, go back and listen to episode. Is it 7? I think it's episode 7 from the top of my head.
The link will be in the show notes anyway.
The link will be in the show notes. Go back and listen to the interview I did with Graham, because he explains the differences and what people can keep that has to remain spec and what things can change and some of that's like the gearing and stuff. It gives manufacturers a safe space in which they can learn about all these, some of the electric, you know, the EV setups in a kind of safe zone, whilst also promoting and showing off the fact that they are doing lots of research into electrical drivetrains. And of course, this stuff won't just feed back into Jaguar, because it's Jaguar Land Rover, feed back into Land Rovers too, and they're already working on, or already have hybrids available in Range Rovers and Range Rover Sports. So yeah, I think this is great. I think this is really good, because we don't want to see a new championship like Formula E. It's hoping to get through that difficult second season. But it's doing it and managing to have increased manufacturer support in there.
Yeah, I mean, with so many other manufacturers talking about how hybrid and electric is the future, and that, you know, and all these 2020 visions. Then I can see more manufacturers coming into it, and I really can. And it's great, because Formula One seems to be becoming less and less relevant unless you like Formula One, I've got to say. Because mm-hmm. there's so much politics going on. There's so much tosh going on in the background of it that it hinders the racing mm-hmm. and the technical excellence. And it's all about, I mean, other podcasts talk about this better than we do, but it seems to be all about, oh no, come on, you can't drive like that. We need to drive in this manner, and where it didn't used to be like that. Whereas everyone's comfortable with there being a strategy in Formula E, because it's a new technology that they're having. People are having to balance between nursing and racing, so that you can see the skill in that. Mm-hmm. Because it's ingrained into the sport.
One of my favourite things about Formula E is when you look at the car the tyres on the cars, they're treaded. They're just like, when they are Michelin Pilot Sports, they are essentially road tyres. They're slightly above road tyres, but the tread and the pattern and all that stuff, and you can look at it and go, hey, that's just like the tyres on my car. As opposed to, wow, this is some super sticky thing with no treads or anything like that. It's that kind of level where, sure, it's got a swoopy, you know, formula style body, but there's loads of bits you look at it and you go, hey, actually I can see how that relates back to my road car. And I think that's one of the things I think is really cool about Formula E. There's on the blog, on our blog page, if you go right the way back to the bottom, the very first blog on there actually is from the very first Formula E testing at Donington, and I went into quite a lot of detail back then about just what the what the construction of the car is. So there's a whole breakdown. There's a whole annotated diagram around it. Of course, you can go to the Formula E site and you can find all of that, because it is more or less a spec tub in there, based on that original kind of full Qualcomm liveried car that we can see in the pictures there that's been taken to bits. And again, thanks to Graham Davison from Qualcomm for giving me that level of access and giving me the tour and stuff. So that really made a good day, even better that day. That was good fun.
Yep, that was a good interview. That was. But moving on.
Yes. Oh, there's an awesome video. The other bit that I meant to say in there, and that's what I was hunting for just there, is there is a fantastic video that goes along with that. Again, well worth a few minutes of your time. It is particularly loud. Watch out for that.
I've not watched it yet. I've not had a chance. So.
Oh, it's really good. There's the full Tron.
Okay.
It's all blocks and lines and great and
the future.
Type noises, yes, the future, definitely the future. So, next up, good news. Pininfarina. Well, it is good news. It's not totally sound like good news. The Indian Mahindra Group has bought a controlling stake in the Italian design house. It's had a lot of debt. It's had a lot of debt these last few years. It's been particularly difficult for many of these houses. We know that ID Jajaro is part of Volkswagen, although goodness knows for how much longer. You know, some of the others are having real trouble and be going out of business. Did Zagato go out of business? I think so. Stuck in the back of my mind. But no, unfortunately, the Farina family, the Pininfarina family, as they are now, have sold that controlling stake for £122 million to Mahindra. So sad that the Pininfarina family no longer control it, but good news that it hasn't just gone down the tubes. It has actually been bought by Mahindra.
Absolutely.
And I was going to say hopefully that they'll treat Pininfarina in similar kind of manner as the way that Tata seem to be treating JLR, which is just respecting it, seem to be letting it get on and investing and being good at what it's doing. I was chatting car as I do have other topics, okay, to make it clear. But I was chatting cars over dinner with a Swedish client, and he was saying how much he likes Jaguars now, but for a long time it was of no interest to him. It really wasn't. He had an M5. He had a whole load of other cars, different types. He said, Jaguar never occurred to me. But he said, recently he had the chance to have a good poke at an F-type. He said, not just that. He said, the XEs and the XFs. He said, they are a proper alternative now. And that was a non-Brit saying that. Although, to be honest, the Swedish are almost British. As someone commented on Twitter last night, the Swedish are a lot like the British. They've just got much better flat pack furniture. It was particularly good. So that was quite nice. It's not just us being bullish and British about Jaguar, which is always nice. That should be good, and that should help Mahindra, because I have noticed, having visited India, and seeing some of the Mahindra vehicles a couple of years ago, they have been aesthetically and technologically challenged, I think is a fair way of putting it. They're pretty crude devices, and even the Indians look at them and go, no, I wouldn't have a Mahindra. I'd much rather buy a Maruti Suzuki or something instead. So yeah, that should be good. I hope to see Pininfarina survive from that. And the nice thing about Mahindra, it's not as if it's a big competition for some of the potential customers for Pininfarina in there. So I don't see that Fiat would have an issue, or Peugeot, or any of these people.
No.
With the fact that it's Mahindra that owns it, whereas they would do if it was, I don't see Peugeot using them if they're owned by Fiat, for example.
No, exactly.
No matter how many Chinese walls they reckon are in place. So no, I think of that was no pun intended, if that's what you were laughing at. But, it's I think it's think if any kind of conglomerate or any kind of vehicle manufacturer to buy them, I think that's the right kind of group. Good stuff.
So, finally, something you found.
Yeah, for the silly thing to end on. You remember a few months ago, is it like 6 months to a year ago, it hit the news that this Texan plumbing company had sold a pickup truck. And then many months later, it appeared on the news with an anti-aircraft gun mounted in the back of it, and still with the phone number and livery of said Texan plumbing company. Well, it turns out, according to Truckier, this is one of the sub-blogs of Jalopnik, that the owner, a chap called Mark Oberholzer, is now suing the he's seeking $1 million in punitive damages for fraud, gross negligence, negligent misrepresentation, defamation, invasion of privacy, and deceptive trade, according to AutoNation Ford Gulf Freeway, the dealership where he sold his F-250 work truck to in October 2013, and that's according to the Courthouse News Service. And he's claiming that the salesman there said to stop removing the stickers, the Mark 1 plumbing stickers off his truck, because he might blemish the vehicle paint and that the dealership had a better way of removing them. And basically, not to worry, we'll take those off. And of course, they didn't. And he's saying that, you know, he's having all sorts of issues. Angry calls, death threats. From the kind of, it says angry people. I read that as idiots who believe that Mark 1 plumbing aids and abets terror groups. Yeah. So it went to, supposedly the truck was sold at a Dallas auction, sent back to Houston, shipped to Turkey, and then somehow later ended up going from Turkey to Syria, according to the Houston Chronicle. So there we go. So guys, please make sure you deliver your vehicle. Work vehicles before you sell them. I mean, I know that I have made a point of pointing all of this story out to my father to make sure that he delivers his Toyota Hilux whenever they leave his service, so that they don't start appearing in North Africa or the Middle East.
Build Hadrian's Wall again if they see that on the telly. Or make sure the Fourth Road Bridge doesn't get fixed.
Oh, don't. He was on about that the other day.
I bet he was.
He blooming is.
I've noticed a lot that I've seen on Twitter, a lot of blaming the people who are the government, in inverted commas now, of Scotland, and who is the head of SNP, because she was infrastructure minister, wasn't she?
I believe she was. I try not to pay that much attention to Ms. Sturgeon.
So it's interesting that. But the love affair runs out as soon as you suddenly tell people, you know, your commute to the crummy job that you've got that you don't like but you have to do. Now we've made it even worse.
it's not just that. And then the people who are erstwhile supporters of the current regime in Scotland are blaming the predecessors, and it's just everybody's blaming everyone else. It's the usual case. It's the usual kind of political setup. It's not me, it's him. And the supporters are one side saying it's the other. So whatever happened, basically the Fourth Road Bridge, the people have been trying to patch it, and leave it until the new one was ready. And they failed. So I did tweet just not long after the show came out last week, discovered the fantastic at Fourth Road Bridge Twitter handle, by the way, which is, they're doing, whoever the contractor is doing a really good sales job, because they're making sure that people know what's happening on the bridge. And it's like, yeah, we're really sorry, we can't open it to pedestrians and cyclists. it's not because, you know, it's because both sides basically are, you know, are busy building sites right at the moment. And so there isn't room for cyclists and stuff to go through. And then there's pictures of a guy carrying scaffolding poles and stuff, you know, and making sure, look, here's the new part being made in somewhere, not in, I don't think it was Falkirk. It might have been Falkirk. Here's the new part being made in Falkirk. Look, here it is. So that somebody is putting a lot of effort into saying, okay, this is not good, but let's at least tell people what we're doing and what how progress is.
Well, again, I'm going to claim responsibility for that.
Yes, they were obviously listening.
They were listening to this podcast where we have told people how to how best to act in crisis management in this manner.
Hmm. They're doing a nice job of it.
I've seen your retweets, and they are doing. If I was okay, I'd be unhappy. If I was a commuter, I'd be seriously unhappy. But at least I could see that people are shifting, and they seem to be shifting as quickly as they can as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is that I've seen lots of politicians getting the blame, but I haven't seen. Now I don't know who it is now these days. It used to be Bear Scotland. So it was the company with responsibility for maintaining the Scottish trunk roads because it was kind of privatised, outsourced.
Well, I'm sure it came out very quickly that funding for that had been diverted or shrunk or something. So it very soon after the news that they had to shut it, mm-hmm. I'm sure people were talking about how. Well, of course they did, because they stopped any repair work because money dried up.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, then it does go back to the politicians who went, no, we'll turn that tap off and turn the tap on over here or whatever.
So anyway, it's if you do are wondering what the progress is or want to know what's happening, then at Forth Road Bridge is a particularly useful Twitter account to follow. And yeah, it's actually been quite interesting. It doesn't affect me, but it's... So, therefore, I've been able to find it interesting. So, my sympathies for those of you who are caught in that particular...
Yes, anyone that listens to this show that has to deal with that, I feel so sorry for you. And just keep on trucking. Hopefully it'll be over soon. Because it's just awful.
I've just realised that we forgot one more piece of good news, by the way.
Have we?
It was sneaking in at the bottom of running order. I think I'd copied it across and then not moved it off. And that's about Jaguar Land Rover confirmed.
Oh, yes.
For that. Yeah. Sorry, meant to mention this up front. So, yeah, JLR confirming their new factory in Slovakia at the start of the week, which is good, not just in the fact that they are expanding, they are doing well, and that it will employ around 2,800 people, but that there will need to be additional jobs in the UK as well in order to support that factory and that particular venture. So this is pretty good going. So yeah, workforce 37,000 people, and over £11 billion investment from JLR. So yeah. Awesome. It's great.
Work.
Over 80% of its production is exported, according to the numbers there. So, again, it's great for Britain bringing in money for the UK. So, apologies for tacking that one in the end there, but I thought it was such a good piece of news that it was worth mentioning.
We are big supporters of manufacturing in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think I may have mentioned that last week once or twice.
And the week before, I think it was me. And the week before, yeah. Just a little bit. Anyhow, Andrew, outside of the podcast, over the Christmas period, and just generally, how can people get in touch with you?
The best way would be via Twitter, where I am at Cracked Windscreen. And how about you, Alan?
Again, Twitter, where I'm at AJP Bradley. For me personally, for the show, then there's Twitter as well. There's at Motoring Podcast. So please feel free to tweet in our general direction. Anything that you think we should be talking about, or you'd like to see us talking about, like to hear us talking about, even as well. We're a Motoring Podcast on Facebook. as well. And although don't get me started on Facebook and having a perfect Facebook page. It's a little bit annoying. But one other thing is that the blog feed, if you want to know when we have, if you are a fan, mostly if you're a fan of kind of Apple-y telephones and pads and stuff like I am, then we're also on Apple News now as well. We're an official Apple News channel.
Are we? Oh, right. Okay.
We are. Ooh. Yes, as of middle of the night last night, something like that.
Excellent.
We're official Apple News channel, so you can subscribe to Motoring Podcast and Apple News. I will actually need to make up a proper logo for us probably at some time over Christmas. I'll put it in there. So yeah, any of our blog posts will appear magically as part of your Apple News feed on your phones and pads, should you so desire. So that's this week's new fun channel. Old fun channels for the podcast still exist. Of course, iTunes, Overcast, Downcast, Stitcher, all the usual podcast apps. Best ways to download this. If you could take 20 seconds of your time to give us a rating, that would be fantastic. If you can take 30 seconds of your time to tell a friend or tell your friends about us and suggest us in their general direction, then that would be even better. There's nothing like a personal recommendation. So that would be fab. This is, all right, so this is our last live show before Christmas. I say live show as in our last new show before Christmas. Got another special coming up for next week to fill in the gap, and we'll be back with new shows, proper new shows, week commencing the 4th of January, I believe.
Yes.
We haven't actually discussed that. I'm just assuming it's week commencing the 4th of January. So probably recording on Tuesday the 5th. Hint, hint. At some point after this, Andrew and I will actually discuss this and hope that I'm correct. But I would imagine, but we'll be back that week anyway. First full week of January. We'll be back with news. To be honest, not much point being over the Christmas period because everyone else will be on holiday too. Until then, hope you have a very happy Christmas and New Year period. And that's the bit I'm missing. I knew there was something. So yes. Until then, until next time, I've been Alan Bradley. Good night.
And I've been Andrew Clues. Good night.
And safe motoring, folks. There was something. I knew there was something I was missing in there.